This is Steve Sherlock with another in the series of podcasts for Franklin Matters. This is number 125 in the series, if I've counted correctly. This is the recording in total of the special school superintendent search forum that took place on Monday, January 30th, in the council chambers at the municipal building in Franklin. You'll hear the intro from school committee chair Kevin O'Malley. A couple of the other school committee members will do the introductions of the individual candidates. You'll hear Chelmsford Assistant Superintendent Linda Hirsch first, followed by Weymouth Assistant Superintendent Susan Kushka, followed by Blackstone Millville Assistant Superintendent David Thompson. Chair O'Malley returns to do a wrap of next steps as a couple of the candidates continue to do their site visits the rest of the week, and then the school committee will be making their decision at the school committee meeting next week. So it'll be February 7th or something like that. It's the first Tuesday in February. Anyway, there'll be additional links in the Franklin Matters for the resumes of the individual candidates, and I hope you listen along and hear and use this as input to the survey that'll be coming out to get your feedback, our feedback, to the school committee to make their decision for the education of our students and the future of our students.
Well, good evening, everyone. I am totally delighted to see so many of you here. In truth, you should be here. This may be the most important night in this town for the next 3 years or 5 years or years into the future. For this is the night where you're going to meet the candidates, the three of whom will be presenting tonight, and one of them is very likely to be the candidate who will take over the education of the children of this town. So we in the school committee have taken this as the most important thing that we could possibly do. I've been in education 45 years, and this is the most important thing I've ever done. We have three good candidates. They're here to interact with you, so don't be shy. Franklin is not a shy town, so don't be shy tonight. 25 minutes, and in these 25 minutes, Dr. Hirsch, Linda Hirsch, will speak to you, answer your questions, and just present herself to you. And we are interested in your feedback through the email process. Ann Bergen has done tremendous work in organizing all the details that are many. Any details you want to share?
No, I just wanted to let people know that the reason we asked you to sign in with your email address is that we want to make sure that we send out a link to a survey so that you can give feedback on each candidate. Your feedback is very, very important to us, and we'll be evaluating all of that and going from there. So Denise actually is going to introduce our, Denise Schultz is going to be a school committee member, is going to introduce our first wonderful finalist tonight. So Denise, I'm going to ask you if you would, if you haven't signed in, just before you leave, make sure that you do, okay?
Last thing I'll say, I hope you know Steve Sherlock. He is the twice told tales man of Fred. He tells all the news. He is here and will be recording this meeting. And Mike Leeson, down the back from the Milford Daily News, will be here as well reporting on this evening.
And we did ask also, just if you wouldn't mind when you ask a question, which we're encouraging you to do, if you wouldn't mind standing, just giving your name and address, just if you would do that, that would be appreciated. Denise?
Hi, so I'm Denise Schultz. I'm the chair of the Community Relations Subcommittee of the school committee. It consists of Vanessa, Ann, and myself, so we all thank you for coming tonight. It was really important to us that we have this community public aspect of our process. I'd like to introduce Dr. Linda Hirsch, who is currently the assistant superintendent in Chelmsford, and I'm going to let her do a little introduction, and then we'll have about 20 minutes or so of questions.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. So first of all, thank you very much for being out here this evening. I know the tremendous amount of time it takes to do any type of search, especially a superintendent search. So I appreciate you taking that extra time and coming out. This is a fantastic crowd. Like I said, I'm currently the Assistant Superintendent of Schools in Chelmsford. My primary responsibility is curriculum instruction and assessment. However, I also am the only other Assistant Superintendent in the district, so I typically take over many of the duties of the superintendent and any other tasks that go from there. Prior to that, I was the English Department Coordinator for the district, which was an administrative job, as well as I've been an elementary school teacher, middle school teacher, and a high school teacher. I have a good idea of where students have started and then where they need to go. And I was telling people today, I've been fortunate enough to be able to teach graduate level classes. So I'm now starting to see that adult ed piece and, you know, where they're really going after we send them out of our school districts. So that's been very exciting, and it also keeps me grounded to what's happening in the classroom. Many people, of course, I'm sure in your mind, you're thinking, you know, why Franklin? And that's an important question that I feel like I need to answer to the group. So one of the first things I did is, if you were able to take my resume and then look at my jobs, you would see that I would get professional development before going to the next step. So when I started thinking about the superintendency, the first thing that popped into my mind is, okay, I'm gonna need some professional development around this, so what do I do? So luckily for me, and for anyone else that's in this program, the Massachusetts Association of School Superintendents has an aspiring superintendent program. So that was the first thing I signed up for, to hear, you know, the panels, to talk with current superintendents, former superintendents, to find out what the whole process was about. So that was wonderful for me, and it allowed me to say, okay, these might be some of my next steps towards superintendency. So then this job popped up, and like all superintendents, we get all the jobs, so we see everything that's happening, and I was like, oh, that's exciting, Franklin. And then I looked again, I'm like, oh, that's exciting, it's Franklin again, like, that's amazing. So I'm very familiar with this district, because you are one of what's called a DART district, which we use for our MCAS scores, which means that either all of our schools or some of our schools have the same type of makeup of your schools, right? So meaning amount of students, scores, how students, you know, average median price of your home. So Franklin's always been there academically for me. And what we typically do with that type of tool is just reach out and see what kind of programs do they have. So got a little excited when I saw this job, started digging around and said, okay, there's a little bit more to Franklin that I don't necessarily know. I'm familiar with the location. I have family in this area. I drive through Franklin often, but I wanted to find out what was Franklin all about. So I took the time to go through a lot of your documents, watch some of your, you know, school committee meetings, all of that stuff, to find out, okay, this is basically in direct alignment with what I do. It also mirrors the Chelmsford Public Schools, and by my resume, if you've had a chance to look at it, I don't jump around. I've been in Chelmsford for 12 years, and if I'm going to make a jump to do this next step, I want it to be in a place that I can make a home. And when I saw Franklin and saw what they had, it felt like a good home for me. So that's just kind of my, you know, brief introduction to who I am, and I'm willing to take questions at this time, or I can just keep talking, which I'm very good at. So do they need to go to the mic?
No, actually, okay. Because the mic is
oh, that's right,
really
we're not.
On.
Okay.
So
sorry, I'm so, yeah, so I never know.
Yes,
I'm
never, I will. Yes.
Shy.
Yes.
All right, I'm Jessica Pisano, 109 Union, Franklin resident, and Here's my first question. In light of the overwhelming data and what we know about the intellectual, physical, and emotional needs of all students as a top priority for a district, what would you do as superintendent to work to align the start time of the middle school and high school to the national recommendations and standards put out by the APA?
All right, you brought a cheerleading squad. Let's see how it goes. Lots of talk about school start times, stop times. The research out there is showing that it's definitely a different concept for what's happening in our schools, what we're not used to, the pros and the cons. I think one of the first things that you have to do before you make any type of change, whether big or small, and this would be a very big one, is to really research it yourself, right? You can read things, you can hear from people, but the first thing you'd want to do is start doing the research, and through that I would suggest some type of committee that has many of the stakeholders involved, who it's going to involve, and to really vet out, okay, if you make some type of change like this, what's the ripple effect? You know, the pebble in the pond. The pond starts to, you know, you see the ripple effect, and if you don't see the outside and what's happening, you know, that's a problem. So I would suggest through committee work to understand what the concept is all about, how it applies to your school district specifically, and then what effects is that and how does that affect all of your stakeholders? Because depending on how your busing works and students going in, it depends, you know, how do they need to get to school? Is it going to affect any after school activities, work, sports, all of those things? So the first thing I would do is definitely work together with the committee to see, and if this is the direction that, you know, the school district wishes to go. I get to call on people, it's like a class, right?
Yeah. I'm Gail Irwin, 56 Hilltop Road, and I have children in the school district. So one of the things when I was reading the search and the guidelines for the job description, it said visible. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, how do you look at yourself being visible in the community? And I think visible not just by saying, well, I'll go to town council meetings, I'll go to school committee meetings, because as you can see, as a town of 30,000, we have 30 here. So visible in a way that people that will actually see you and hear you and get a chance to know you.
Great question. And this is a conversation that I have often with administrators when I met with groups today, because I had my site visit here today. For anyone that didn't know, I've been here since, 12:30?
Yeah.
I'm enjoying myself. There's two different things. You can get very removed from students, from schools, from teachers, as you start to go through the process of moving up in administration. And you have to be very conscious about that. And you have to think, what does that look like? And just like you said, I'm not gonna just stand in a hallway and be like, I'm here, you know, surprise, or, you know, any of those councils that you talked about were actual, like, that's my job. So, you know, beyond that. So there's two different things. One, I'm gonna talk about the community piece, and I'm also gonna talk about the classroom piece. So for the community piece, I make a conscious effort to have community coffees every month along with the superintendent. We pick a spot, we make sure that we do the morning and then the evenings. We've been contemplating like an afternoon. I'm not sure what kind of event, you know, how many people we would capture from that, but since we're working on this and making sure that we're out there in the community, we thought we would do that. Other things that beyond just the job is going, like, I'm always at the, every year at the Theater Guild for all of their different events. I go to band concerts. I even will like substitute out for my department coordinators. So I have a group of department coordinators that for every content area, and we cover for each other if somebody's not available, because I'm always there. So I can get up on the stage and have that conversation. like I said, games, whether it's events for the students. For example, I take students along with the department coordinator for mathematics into Amazon so that we can have it's basically a field trip. We're running a field trip to administrators who probably shouldn't be running a field trip, but it's pretty funny. Take them into Boston, make sure those kids have those connections. I work very closely with, in Chelmsford, we're near UMass Lowell. So I work very closely with UMass Lowell to also work with their UTeach program, bringing teachers from the university into the school district. I'll do the mock interviews with them, so there's another, you know, community piece beyond, like, the, you know, Chelmsford. And then just making sure, like, I also do a tweet chat, because not everybody wants to come out to stuff, they want to work electronically. So monthly there's a tweet chat for people to connect. It's first Thursday of the month from 8 to 8:30. We pick a topic. Last one was on homework, very hot topic, it was unbelievable. So we, you know, going through those pieces and that kind of stuff. In terms of the schools, because that's visibility too, I'm in schools often. I do learning walks, which are basically almost like a 3-minute walk. I mean, there's different ways. You can do instructional rounds, all different names for everything, because that's what we do in education, make up names for things. So we walk, again, I'm not gonna stand in the hallway, go to the principal, I'm here. So we walk through all the classrooms. I switch up administrators in terms of that. I bring high school principal, elementary, middle to elementary, just so everybody gets a little bit of a flavor. Recently, I've been bringing in, I know school committee members will come with me as well, because that's also an awkward situation for them to just show up at a school if they don't really have a purpose. And lastly, I will, in the afternoons or the mornings, depending on what my schedule looks like, if we're lacking in some substitutes, I've substituted in the classroom because that gets me back with the kids. The funnier part about that is when they were my former students and they didn't think I was coming back, and I did. So, good, lucky them. So I'm losing that profile though. So there's a multiple different ways you can do it, but you have to do it. Whether you start off in a school every day to just make sure that you're making that connection, whether you're just in town, shopping, showing up at different events, you have to be present.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, you hand that first.
Yes, I'm okay. Go beside the room. So you might not be happy with that, but my name is Carol O'Neill. I am not going away. I am a former EA with the town of Franklin. I worked there for 20 years. So that makes me not a teacher. It doesn't make me a principal. It doesn't make me any kind of administrator at all. It makes me an educational assistant, where I was able to gain a perspective that kind of like being a fly on the wall. I also have two knees and two hips replaced, and that did not make the system happy. So I just want to know, have you heard of workplace bullying? But before, I will explain to people that it is, according to the Workplace Bullying Institute, it is the repeated health-harming mistreatment of one or more persons by one or more perpetrators. It is abusive conduct that is threatening, humiliating, or intimidating. Or there is work interference, called sabotage, of our children, which prevents work from getting done.
Carol, what's your question?
Do you know about workplace bullying and the fact that we sometimes use it to dismiss people who have, disabilities, and there's a lot from this town, and we have a bad culture. My question to you is, do you know about that, and what do you intend to do about that?
Well, I can't speak for what's happened in Franklin or any of your situations, because clearly, you know, I haven't been involved. But if the question is about workplace bullying, the bullying laws do apply to the adults as much as they do the students.
There are none.
There are. There are laws, and there's, you know, specific things that people need to go through. Obviously, the first things you do is whenever you have a claim, it has to be taken seriously, and there needs to be an investigation. And once you go through that piece of that investigation, you make a determination at the end. So, unfortunately, I can't answer for what's been happening or what you've observed or anything that may have you've seen happen to someone else. But you would have to, you take that seriously, and you work very closely with your human resource department and whoever else is involved, and you make sure that you do a full investigation. There's certain processes that go through with that, depending on who's being bullied or the victim at that point, and you need to make sure you protect that victim as well.
I ask you because the fish rots from the head.
Yeah. Thank you. Oh, you win. Yeah. I was trying to remember.
My name is Lisa Brady. I live in 36 Kimberly Avenue. I have two children in the school system right now. As you know, we have very high performing schools. We have amazing administration and teachers. But we also, despite all the low funding that we have in the school system, we've also had many cuts. We've had language in the elementary school cut, foreign language. We've had teacher cuts, we've had arts, we've had gifted program cuts, et cetera. So what I want to know is, if you could please outline several specific actions that you will take to get Franklin from good to great.
I read that book too. It's a great book. So there's a few things, right? Again, not having access to how you spend your funds. There's certain things that you can do beyond the efficiencies piece, right? Because the bulk of your budget is going to be the people, right? That's what's going to eventually drive most of the budget. But what you have to start doing is kind of thinking creatively within that budget and what you have. Some of the things that we work in Chelmsford, and you're not unique, right? This is happening in many communities. Chelmsford is one of them. We've had to make some significant cuts in programming. One of the first things I think of, though, is that I am very much in believing that you need to have a comprehensive curriculum. So what that means is that you don't just cut something completely out and then see how it works for the students. Because if you make the mistake to think that one person actually has, one department is not going to affect the other departments, that's a huge problem, right? So beyond that, as you go through the budgeting process, you really have to start thinking about how can you be creative with what you have. Some of the things that we do is we work within our grants. How can we change up those grants? How can we provide people with support that they need, student support? So, for example, we were rethinking our Title I funds, and we turned that into interventionists. So now we have teachers that may have been cut. You don't have as many, but the students need to still have some type of service. So taking that and putting interventionists in the schools will allow students to be able to fluidly go in if they have some type of gap, whether it's ELA, mathematics. We've actually even talked about, and we're not there yet, but like almost a interventionist for like the social emotional piece, right? If a student's not necessarily an academic piece, but they need some type of support to go back into the classroom. So that's one way you can be creative with your monies. Other things that we've done is through our partnerships with UMass or Harvard University. Right now with Harvard University, we have the researchers coming in. They're providing different ways to, right now this is about Algebra 1. So we're looking at different ways of teaching Algebra 1 students with these materials, which then has the efficiencies, as well as blended learning models, where we can bring in that technology piece, allowing students to still have that access to what they need. And also within UMass, we're trying to bring, they're already here. We have international teachers that have come in. They're the best and the brightest from their countries, and they're also here servicing our students. So we try to get that global piece, because I would agree with you, like, you know, foreign languages, world languages, this is a global society. We have to be open to all of those things. So once you, the other piece that you have to think about is, what are your goals? Because all the monies should be surrounding those goals and supporting those goals. What is important? So as you do your strategic planning, your district improvement plans, your school improvement plans, it all should be in alignment with how the money goes.
Hi, Jim Strauss, two boys in the school system, and I'm a former teacher and do a lot of training with teachers on social-emotional development. So that was an area that I wanted to hit on and just get your sense around sort of educating that whole child with that piece of it, specifically with regards to homework and homework levels, and sort of about 4 or 5 years ago we brought in the Race to Nowhere movie and looking at sort of the, you know, the stresses that our kids are under, which I hear from teachers all the time and certainly see with my own kids and friends' kids. So just wondering sort of your take on the SEL piece and also specifically on homework load.
Were you on my tweet chat? Like, you should have asked that question. I would have had an answer. Even when I started in Chelmsford as a teacher and beforehand, we've always talked about homework, right? Because sometimes it's not always fair and equitable. It depends on how teachers are actually weighting it, how important it is. So we talk a lot about that. But just recently, last year, we started with, we found at the secondary level this is really an issue. So the first thing we did is we got the literacies around it. So we were reading Overloaded and Underprepared. I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Pope's work. So we as an admin group, because if you say we're doing something and nobody knows really what that doing is, it's kind of messy. So we ended up with starting with the literacies around that book. And then the first thing we did is we did an assessment of teachers of where are we with homework? What is it weighted? How big is it? What's appropriate for a social studies piece opposed to math? And as a group, we got together and really refined what homework was. Now that was at the high school level. Middle school, they work in teams, so they naturally tend to talk about what's going on for students and how they're doing and who's giving a test, but that is part of the whole process of the social emotional piece, because they're kids, right? And if we don't support that piece, they're not going to learn. So a lot of it has to do with starting with that literacy piece and then branching out what's appropriate for a high school level, a middle school level, and an elementary, because they're three different dynamics. Okay, so I'm going to go here because I feel like you've had your hand up a lot.
Oh, no, I haven't.
All right, well, just go with it.
I'm Mary, I'm in the 24 Prospect Street. I'm just wondering, in your current role, sort of what your relationship is with the course director, or special ed, or whatever it's called in Chelmsford, and sort of your expectation or your relationship between, in the role of the superintendent and working with special education, and the idea of sort of how much of the pie that budget takes and how you sort of work with and support that, and your beliefs around sort of special ed staff and working with.
Well, I'll answer both of you. I'm looking, and we'll go to this side of the room. I don't see them as two separate places. I was a special ed teacher in Lexington, so I'm very much aware of what it's like to implement and support students in the classroom. I was fortunate enough that there was actually, given the student makeup, that there was four third grade teachers and four special educators, right, to do a full co-teaching piece. So I've never seen them as two separate pieces. I've always worked with these director of student services, so that's for special ed. We work closely to make sure that the grants are in alignment because, you know, special ed has specific grants that are professional development. There is the, you know, the Title IIA grants that we usually have on the curriculum side. And then when we're taking an initiative like co-teaching, we make sure that everybody's on the same page and what that looks like, and then provide the support behind that. Budgeting wise, again, we look at the what are we offering for students? How are we supporting the teachers that support those students? Because the last thing you want to do is remove them from the classroom is too much, right? So a lot of our work around multi-tiered system of support has been in that area because I think there's a disconnect between what is truly special education and what is some support in between, and helping the teachers really understand that concept and what they can do prior to a child for referral, and working with them on benchmarking and being able to do those interventions and what an intervention is, because everybody's so stuck on research-based interventions. Interventions could just be as simple as greeting a student at the door if it's like a social-emotional piece. They just need it more, right? It's not like you're gonna, somebody goes to special ed and somehow there's some magical thing that they do. It's just a child needs it more until they can internalize it and then move back to the next piece. So that the special ed department and the curriculum department are the same. Same with technology. They, you can't be in silos because it doesn't work. I'm going to go on this side because I want to be fair.
Hi, I'm Lisa Ola. I live at 5 Desert Circle here in Franklin, and I have 4 children in 3 different schools right now: elementary, middle school, and high school. Can you describe some of your programming and special ed and some creative ideas that you've seen in other districts or implemented, in particular the older grades, the high school level? Mm-hmm. My experience as a mom is elementary school is decent, middle school is phenomenal. As far as I'm concerned, my children did not need to be on any kind of plan in middle school. It's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. The upper school, the high school, it's getting there, but I'm questioning sending my child to that school, quite frankly. It's getting there and I'm hopeful, but can you describe programming that's worked in other districts or to engage students more so, and how teachers can engage them, and just go ahead.
Yep, yep. I'm gonna take little pieces of that. So a few things. I mean, creative programming to keep students in school and not going outside of our district is to do our own programming in-house. We work very closely with the New England Center for Children, and we provide the space so that our students are in their home schools and receive the services that they have. In terms of, like I said, the co-teaching, so that students that are on IEP that may be in Learning Center, they're not receiving their math or their English in a separate setting. Mm-hmm. They're coming into the classroom and they're working.
I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah, as long as it's done well, it's a whole thing. I'll explain it.
You'll
have to call me. We'll explain it to you. But you have to make sure that those students have that same support because they want to be in class together. At the high school level, it's different, right? So it's a matter of what services the students need. So there's a few different layers for us. I mean, we have a literacy program for someone that would really need some support. But again, they're brought into the classroom. Our co-teaching goes all the way to the high school. I mean, technically it should be kind of a gradual release program, but typically by junior and senior year, we're finding that the students are pretty set to go into their regular classrooms. And when we're unleveled at the high school level, for the senior classes, let's say in English and social studies, that tends to be a good support system for them. Lastly, I know I see him standing up again. I'll try to finish my last thing. But we also, for students that are on the cusp and we're not quite sure, we built in a resiliency program. So it's built embedded into their block, into their schedule. It is a class that they meet with this teacher in order to get the supports that they need. But then they also have been assigned a mentor, a teacher mentor, like somebody who's skilled in this, not just, hey, yeah, it's your turn.
I've been asking for
And that months. Person would then monitor that student before they get to the point of, needing additional
fabulous
support.
Idea. I've been asking that for months.
About a minute, 90 seconds to say your final.
Yeah, my final piece, 90 seconds, okay. So again,
but
thank
don't
you.
Rush.
No, it's okay. All right, I got a Fitbit on. I got to do some steps.
We're on 11 now.
It's getting crazy. All right. I'm at 8,000 steps, 2,000 to go. Woo! I'm going to start running around your building. But anyway, thank you again.
Could you talk up just a little?
Do you want me to talk up?
A little louder if you want.
You're the only person in the world that's asked me to talk up. You can tell me to stop talking.
I'm sure everybody's hearing you well.
I'm sorry. I had to tease you a little bit. But seriously, you are. So thank you again. I know that this is a lot going on. It's hard to have a change. I've been through a lot of changes recently in my own district, so I completely understand where your head is at. I'm a pretty open and honest person. What you see is what you get. You're not going to get this completely different person on the other side. I can't help myself. I've been doing this 49 years, and it seems to be working, so I'm just going to continue on with this route. And you have a wonderful town. It's, like I said, very much like it is for Chelmsford. I feel like this is a home, and you obviously take your education seriously. So, you know, that's my piece, and thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, thank you very much. Thanks.
Where we go from here is next Tuesday, after we have feedback, and we hope we have feedback on the three candidates, the school committee will begin the process of choosing the next superintendent. And that Tuesday vote will not be the end of it. It'll be Corey checks, and there'll be a lot of work to be done.
Just a preferred candidate, right?
But yeah. We'll be narrowing down to one candidate, we hope. So please help us with your thoughts on Dr. Hirsch. And we are now waiting for...
Vanessa's going to introduce our next panelist, Val Kennedy.
Thank you, everybody. My name is Vanessa Bellello. I'm another one of the school committee members, and I'm here to introduce Ms. Susan Costa, who is joining us from Weymouth Public Schools, where she is the assistant superintendent for administration and personnel. And she will do the same thing that our previous candidate did, which is give a brief statement, tell us a little bit about her experience, and then we will open it up again to questions. Thank you.
Do I need a mic?
No.
Great. So thank you so much for having me here. I'm really excited about this opportunity. I'm sure some of you saw my resume online, so I won't rehash that, but I do have almost 23 years in education. I've been a general educator, a special educator for 15 years, multiple grade levels. I was fortunate to have been a curriculum leader as well, developed curriculum standards, basic report cards, professional development for staff, and much more. My current role is a little bit unique. We have two assistant superintendents. We have an assistant superintendent who does what I used to do, the curriculum professional development needs and so forth. And I actually handle and oversee personnel matters for the district. So I actually get to do a lot of what a current superintendent does do. I do the hiring and any terminating, the sad part of the job sometimes. I also handle all the legal matters for the district. I help with the budget. I plan how many staff in building when we make staffing changes. So I've had a lot of unique experiences, and I feel like the lenses that I've had as both a parent, a teacher, a building-based administrator, central leadership, I really feel like I'm more than ready to do the job of superintendent. We know that Franklin is a wonderful school district, and I know there's always room for improvement. I would love to have the opportunity to come here, and I think my skill set is a really good match for your district, so I hope you'll give me an opportunity. One of the things I do like to tell people, because I think it's important, as I move into the role of being a superintendent, I didn't come from a very educated family. In fact, I grew up in Dorchester, Boston Public Schools. I was a tough city girl, not really. Never really been tough. I was actually kind of shy and insecure. Anyhow, I went through the Boston Public Schools, and I had a father who didn't graduate high school. I actually had an incredible eighth grade science teacher who made me believe in myself and inspired me to want to go into education just because he was such an incredible teacher. And I think about that, and I feel like one of the most important responsibilities I would have as a superintendent to me is really about being a role model and someone that will inspire staff and students. So I hope I have the opportunity at Franklin. I still have a long career left, and I would love to make this my final home. So thank you.
We'll open up for questions.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, okay. All you guys are saying it's the same question. Same question. I wrote it down. Jessica Pizzano, I live at 109 Union. My question is, in light of the overwhelming data and putting the intellectual, physical, and emotional needs of all students first, how do you see the need to align the start time of the middle school and high school to the national recommendations? What would you do to implement those recommendations?
I think, you know, first I'd want to make sure that everyone was on board with that. I'd want to survey the community and do some more work and make sure that we are all in agreement that that's where we want to go. I do think, in many cases, earlier start times at high school levels have been proven to be beneficial to high school students because they get more sleep. I meant to say later start times. I apologize for that. There has been a lot of research around that. One of the communities nearby, my own community, has actually implemented that. It was quite a struggle because you've got a lot of people that don't always agree, particularly when you're looking at high school and you have after-school sports. It's trying to fit everything in. But I do think the benefits to having high school students get more sleep, we know they're staying up late and they're Skyping and they're texting and doing all the things we don't want them doing late night. But I certainly, before I would undertake that, I would want to make sure that everybody's in support of that and we work together and put a timeline together, because it does take a little time. You have to realign all the bus schedules. You have to get everybody on board with it. You have to change sometimes your academic schedules and also your sporting schedules. And sometimes it's the sports climate that can actually undo the work we do in that area. So I really want to work hard to make sure that everybody's going to work together and is in support of it, because I think the best way to make it work is to get staff, students, and community members on board. And I think that's true of anything, that any initiative that you do, the more community support and the more staff support you get before you do it, the buy-in has to be there. Otherwise, it'll get defeated. So I really would want to make sure I do my due diligence and make sure we get the buy-in from the staff and the community. Hi.
Hi, I will be succinct.
Good, Carol.
All right, my name is Carol O'Neill. I am a former EA in Franklin for the past 20 years. I've been kind of like a fly on the wall because I'm not a teacher, I'm not an administrator, I'm not anything. I am somebody, though, who has had two hip and two knee replacements.
Sorry about
and feel,
that.
Yeah, well, I wasn't treated that well, and there's probably others in the community that weren't as well. So I just want to define to you quickly the definition of workplace bullying by the Workplace Bullying Institute, which is the repeated health-harming mistreatment of one or more persons by one or more perpetrators. It is abusive conduct that is threatening, humiliating, or intimidating, or there is work interference called sabotage, which prevents work from getting done, which means that the students are affected, or it's verbal abuse. Now, my question to you is that we have a high attrition rate here, and I don't think it really has a lot to do with money. Okay, and I'd like to ask you how you feel about this subject and what you intend to do about it, because we're using the legal workplace bullying, it's legal, to get rid of people who are old. We had a lawsuit, she lost,
is
ageism. Say it again? Yeah, okay. Yeah, I know, succinct, but we did have those, and it continues to go. People who have sick people, family that they're harassed because they have to take care of them. And seriously, that is not the core value that I want to see the kids in Franklin having to take on.
So I think your question is asking me what would I do.
What would you do? Absolutely. What would you do? Yes.
This is something that I mean.
Because the fish rots from the head, as I told the other one.
Yeah, and I believe it's important in my role that we all work together and try to solve problems together.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, because I oversee personnel, I am the one that everybody goes to. If there's a personal matter, if there's bullying, harassment, I handle most of the legal situation in the district. So I take a lot of time to be very thorough and do proper investigations. That's very important. One of the things I think that you really need to make sure is that if staff come to you, that you're listening to them. But I think you need to get the whole story and get interview multiple people to find out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I do feel like I do very well, I actually oversee the joint labor management team for the WEA, the Unit A teachers. And I also do that's my Unit A teachers, my Unit B mid-level administrators, and my paraprofessionals. So that's a very large group of people that I oversee that group with. I meet with them monthly. I've had a new turnover in our WEA leadership as well, so it took us time to get in sync together. I have to say, This year we've had such a great collaborative relationship that I'm fine. I'm not getting any grievances coming my way about my principals or anything going on in the district. They're coming to me before that happens, and we're problem solving together. And that's how I believe we do things. That's the best way to do things. I try to head things off and be proactive than reactive. So I would want to be proactive in this situation and find out what is going on. And part of that would be my entry plan with staff and the community. I would want to go in and meet with people in the building, find out what's going well, what's not going well. And if there are things, such as the things that you're talking about happening, I want to get a handle on why it's happening, when it's happening, and what I can do to head it off before it gets more problematic.
Okay.
But I think it would take time to think of all of that.
Yeah, it would.
But Franklin has been my home for 20 years. My name is Steve Lynch, and I have the privilege of working in the Franklin Public Schools before I had children. So I just want to say that it was a wonderful place to work. Did not have any problems.
That's awesome.
Not bullied. I have a son who's at high school with special needs. Mm-hmm. I have a neurotypical seventh grader, and I'm also a special educator in a local district. I just wanted to know what you could do for the special kids in our community. You said you did have a SPED background, that's wonderful, but what can we do to improve the SPED population?
Right? You know, I actually am very passionate about special education. My first job was a middle school special educator. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I feel like you become better by taking all of those lenses. So when I'm in a meeting, I try to picture what the special ed parents thinking, what the students thinking, what I as a parent would be thinking. And I think you have to wear those lenses. So all of those experiences have made me very aware of what's going on. The current district I work in, we have a lot of district programs and a lot of pretty severe needs. And staff will come to me and say how, particularly our social emotional needs, I'm sure here as well, our autistic population and many others, they're growing significantly. And we're really running out of options for how to keep growing these programs. It's becoming a huge problem. It's expensive as well. But one of the things that I like to do is be visible in the programs, especially our high needs programs. I visit often, and when I see things that don't look right, I address them right away. I meet weekly with the special ed administrator and assistant administrator and my other administrative team, and we do talk about whether the curriculum's being met, because I know what I feel is important, that we at least try to meet a bare minimum tier one instruction for our students, that all children should be getting a certain level of instruction. And I know sometimes the cognitive needs don't allow for that, and then you have to adjust to that, but they should be having a consistent education, at least at the starting point, and then you adjust and diversify for their needs. So I can't promise you that I could fix that overnight, but it's something I'm extremely passionate about, and I make myself very visible in those programs. And because I have that background, when my staff come to me and say, we need another teacher here, we need another para there, things like that, I actually want to see the data around it, because sometimes we tend to band-aid sometimes by putting other staff members in, and we don't often solve the root problem. Sometimes the root problem is really they don't have proper training. In fact, some of the programs I look at in my buildings are actually, in my opinion, somewhat overstaffed sometimes, and they're actually better staffed than some of the other district placements that we've gone to. But it really wasn't about that. The staff did not have the proper training in place. So to me, that's more important than adding another staff member, is to go back and see, did they get the right training for the needs of those students? Sometimes it's just as simple as CPI training, that we found out that we added some new paraprofessionals and they never had that training, and it's such a simple fix.
CPI training for?
Crisis prevention intervention. So anyhow, that to me is an easy fix. One of the things I did work very hard, 3 years ago, paraprofessionals were coming to me because they didn't really have an evaluation tool, so I helped develop one with them, and they just negotiated into their contract. And at the time, they were crying out for training. They were just getting kind of thrown in with the teacher training. So we have, I can't say it's perfect yet, but over the last 3 years, we've actually done, along with our identified teacher training, we've done paraprofessional training, we've given them growth mindset training, social emotional development, all the things that we know teachers need and paraprofessionals need. So I think it's important that all the people that work with these special needs students have the right training, and I think that's important that I am visible to know what that is and help with that. Welcome. Hi.
My question for you tonight is, as you know, Franklin has very high performing schools. We have amazing administrators and teachers here, despite all the low funding for people that we have in the system. We've had many cuts. We've had teacher cuts. We've had foreign languages cuts. We've had art programs, gifted programs, all cut. What I'd like to know is if you could please outline several specific actions that you will take to get Franklin from good to great.
That's a large task, and that would be what I would want to do. I, too, am working in a district that's underfunded. Although our state per pupil expenditure has gone up in the last couple of years. We have such a high, we have so many high needs population. We have homeless students, a lot of transportation issues with that. We have a lot of ELL students. We don't have enough staffing to even meet the needs. We have, we've gone up to about 400 ELL students in our schools with over 40 languages now, and I don't have enough staff. No, we're constantly trying to find more money in the budget to do that. I've been less than level serviced, this year maybe level serviced, but that really isn't, because sometimes we haven't actually taken the budget and added in with the costs that came over the year. Let's say another $400,000 came up in special ed costs. That was never put into the budget. So the budget that you're starting with is actually $400,000 less, even at the level service, so that still means cuts. So I've dealt with cuts a lot. I don't like to do it. I think one of the things that if we're looking to try to get the community to find a better funding source, that's really about marketing. I've been to a lot of trainings where it's not what you say, but it's how you present it sometimes, and making it very picture, a lot of visuals, because I think the average person who doesn't deal with budgets and staffing and all the things you do as a superintendent doesn't really understand the bottom line. It's a very complicated thing. There's so many line items, and you try to be transparent, but there's just a lot that goes into it. So I would want to make sure I put together a very visual presentation that really helps the community understand why we have the needs we do. But I also, that per pupil expenditure can be misleading, as I mentioned, in my current district, because we have so many out-of-district needs and special education needs that number is actually even, even if it's a little higher in some districts, it's actually sometimes less because of what you're paying for that goes into that number. So even that is a complicated formula, and it's hard to get people that aren't statisticians to understand that. I'm not even always the best at it, but I know what I need to know. And for me, it's really, how do you get the community to realize what their needs are and what they want? If you're not gonna get better if you don't put the effort into it and put the funds into it. And yes, you are a level two system. It's very hard to stay at level one. I mean, anyone that's in this business that has been listening, watching MCAS scores and PARC scores and all of the above for a long time, it's very hard to stay there, because once you get there, the target then jumps that much further. Even if you're in the 99th percentile, you have to have a certain amount of growth. So I don't always like people to focus just on the level and the per pupil expenditure, but really about, like you talked about, we have great staff here, you have great administrators, and focus on the positive of that. And I think for me, it sounds like what you really need to do is sustain a lot of those good people, like you were talking about. So that would be important for me to develop really good, trusting, collaborative relationships with staff and with administrators, and see if we can keep moving forward in the positive direction. Thank you.
I asked the previous candidate, just your sort of your take on, for all students, social emotional learning, that component, because I do a lot of training with teachers on that, and specifically as students get older in our schools, how you're looking at the homework and the load and just the amount of that, and how that is sometimes not in alignment with the
No, I know a lot of districts are going back and forth with no homework, too much, you know, it is a challenge, and I don't know if there's one right answer to that, because it's really such a complex thing, and your kids in the AP class is obviously going to have that much more homework, but for me, I would want to make sure whatever we decide on homework specifically would be, are they ready for college? Because what I'm always hearing from my college counterparts when I go to meetings is, we're not college ready for, you know, they're going into freshman classes, but they're not there yet. And this is kind of statewide, even though we know as a state we're doing better than the rest of the country. But that being said, colleges are still saying they don't have those everyday readiness skills. And that's really what, when you talk about the social emotional needs, I feel like we've done a good job in many cases educating our kids, because our state scores are showing it, but are they mentally well developed? Are they ready for the global world that they're in? They're not really competing. They don't have the STEM experience, and this is just statewide. I'm not speaking specifically to Franklin, that we really have to do a better job as a country, as a state, to make sure that our kids are meeting the needs of the whole country, not in the whole competing with the world. So the social emotional piece that you mentioned, though, I had a lot of I had a health and safety meeting today with my staff. We met with my unit A teachers, asked to come to this meeting, and we started this quarterly meeting. That's what they keep coming to me about the social and emotional needs of kids, and some of them are afraid for safety because the kids may not be aware of what they're doing sometimes, because we know they have significant needs, but staff are afraid to interact with them because they're afraid of getting hurt. I don't want my staff getting hurt. We need to protect our staff. We need to protect our students. One of the things I did do last year, I brought in trauma-sensitive schools, and we have not done enough work, so I'm not going to tell you that I've done all the work that we need to do, but we did trauma-sensitive training, got staff aware of, not when the kids come into the classroom, you can't be sitting behind your desk, you can't be hiding behind a book, you need to be at the door greeting those kids out in the hallway. I have a very large high school, 2,000 students, and we had a safety concern there 2 years ago, a really significant one, it ended up in the newspaper. Staff came to me and said, I needed, because I oversee safety for the district, I needed to fix that, and I said, we need to fix that. It takes a community, it takes a village to do that. It's not just about one person. I need all the staff to join me. I'll walk the halls with you, but I want you to be visible as well. We need to be outside, greeting our students, checking what their pulse is for the day. If you see a high school, if they come in the room with their head down, something's going on. I might be able to head that off as a teacher if I catch them coming in the door. But if I'm at my desk behind a book, and I know we get busy, believe me, I taught for 15 years, I'm not saying it's an easy job, I know how hard it is. But the same token, if I don't get to know my kids and get to see what's going on, maybe they came in on a Monday morning and they had an abusive situation on the weekend. Just that two extra seconds to greet them at the door makes a big difference. Another training I brought in this year was, we had Jessica Minahan. I don't know if some of you might be familiar with her. She's a BCBA, she's written some great behavioral books. So we are constantly revisiting this topic, but it's a big topic. So it really needs a much bigger answer than I'm giving you. And I would love to see trauma-sensitive schools in some buildings. Like, actually have the whole staff doing a train-the-trainer model. I'd like to see if there are buildings here that have specific programs with more specific needs. And that would be something I would like to consider. But I do think it's a huge cultural shift and a paradigm shift that we need to do together. It's not one person fixing it. It's really the whole staff and all the students working together. You're welcome.
Hi.
Excuse me, I'm losing my voice a little bit.
My question today, first of all, I'm very fortunate to be in this district. We moved to Franklin because of the schools. And I've had a great experience. But I do want to ask, we hear a lot about special education. Mm-hmm. We seem to always focus on the students that need the most academic lift. But I want to hear a little bit about the students that are the higher achieving students that I feel are also getting left behind to some extent, because you know, they're just kind of going along and kind of at the same time staying behind as their peers catch up to them. So can you talk a little bit about your thoughts around that and what you could do or specifically have done in the past?
Yeah, I mean, I think that gets back to, you know, when I talked about our special needs students having a tier one instruction and then having it adjusted for their needs. We have to do the same with all students. You have to find out what their entry level is. A lot of pre-assessing. I don't always think we do a great job pre-assessing. We have all these assessments that show, so maybe our kids are all achieving, but where do they start? If they already started at 90% and they get to 100, do they really do well? That's not a lot of growth. So I would rather see us doing a lot more pre-assessment with students and really finding out, are there certain things that I can do? It comes down to the individual teacher. And when they're developing their curriculum maps, you need to not just have the basic curriculum map, you have to have tiered activities for the higher achieving students as well. And I think that's where the Common Core having come in, we've taken a few years to adjust to that, but it hasn't really taken us to that next level with those higher students. So to me, that's something I would want to map out with our curriculum leaders in the district. There are things that we can add to the maps now to make it a higher tiered instruction, and I want to make sure we're doing a lot more pre-assessment before we actually dive into the curriculum. Because again, if I find out 50% of my class already knows that, then I've just wasted 2 weeks on the instruction when half of them already have it. So to me, getting back to the teachers, working with them to make sure that they know how to figure out where the kids are coming in and not assuming where they're coming in, and then teaching them to their levels and trying to push them to a higher level. But it definitely is something that if we've gotten everybody down to the core curriculum now and they're comfortable with that, now we need to take it to the next level. Because I think it takes a long time to develop the curriculum in-house. I mapped it out a lot from K-8 and then K-12 with my specialists as well. And it took us a very long time, as I'm sure it has in Franklin, to map out the core curriculum. And then you have to take it and move it to a different direction. So I would want to work with the curriculum leader and see what we could develop together to diversify for those needs as well.
To piggyback off of that question, it sounds like you're putting it all on the teachers, that the teachers have to differentiate. How do you feel about, Franklin is very, at least the administration I've seen is not into any type of level. Mm-hmm. You know, I think if the administration had their way, it would be there'd be no honors, no that type of thing. You see it a little bit in math, mm-hmm. but you don't see it. We have, the high school has something called open honors, which is nothing more than a joke where mm-hmm. this person's an honors person and this person isn't an honors person. And it's putting a lot on the teachers, where you've already mentioned that the teachers have to deal with the social, emotional,
yeah.
and all that stuff. So my question to you would be, how do you feel about level? You know, we used to call it tracking. Mm-hmm. Tracking is such a negative connotation, but you have these students. I mean, I have a special ed student. I feel like they do a very good job with him. But what about those students that are at the mm-hmm. top and they're sitting there bored out of their mind?
Yeah, I would like to look at the course offerings and really dive into that before I would make a decision on it. But I don't disagree as far as making sure that we have the right levels in place for all students. And we do have AP courses at my high school currently. It works for many kids, but then sometimes we have kids that may not meet the general criteria, but actually are academically gifted, but they're not doing homework and other things, and they get bumped out of that. So that's why I have a little bit mixed feelings, because sometimes we're not properly identifying the kids that belong in those. But if we've identified properly, I would not have a problem with AP courses. I would want to vet it out and find out what's working and what's not before I made a decision on that. I'm not opposed to it. I've seen it work well both ways. It really depends on how it's working for your district, so I want to get to know it. I have seen times when we had leveling at one of my buildings, we went away from leveling and did all heterogeneous, and there's pros and cons to that, because we have a lot of groupings that happen, but it does put more work on the teacher. I can tell you from experience, when I had five or six different levels in my class, it's definitely a lot more work. So I think there's a balance there that we could find. It's certainly worth looking into. I would definitely want to look at the college course offerings that you currently have before I make a decision on that, and I'd want to find out what the rationale was for moving away from that before I made a decision on it. Hi.
Hi, Louisa Ola. I live in Black River Circle. I have four children in three different schools. Tying in with your comment, Liz, and your comment about special ed and typical kids, I got a mix of that going on. I find that there's some exceptional teachers in this district that are just, she being one of them, okay? Constant emails, Karen Cornell, another math teacher who's phenomenal, that they inspire kids and they're passionate about teaching. And there are some staff that it just amazes me, but yet I look across the way, the high school's coming along and I like the progress that I'm seeing there, but do you have any ideas on how to, the communication with the different schools? I mean, some of these teachers are truly gifted in how they can get students to step up the plate and do the best that, and be the best that they can be. Any ideas on networking within the district itself, and you know, it's just, there's a little bit of a disparity. I'm like, you know, why can't we all work together and channel their gifts?
I would love to see that.
To get the best of the student and engage them. Mm-hmm.
I hear what you're saying.
Especially at the older levels. I'm having a little bit of a tough time with my oldest, very bright kid, and I feel like we've lost him in some way, but I just feel like these people, he worked like a workhorse for them. And we're getting there at the high school, but it's not quite there yet.
You know, I think that I've seen a lot of teachers that are exemplary come across my path. I oversee the evaluation tool for the district. And I think one of the things we tried to do when we were negotiating that evaluation tool was to get us to use peer, like you're talking, our exemplary staff members and have them do modeling for others. But our staff wasn't really there yet. I would love to be able to get staff working together that way. We've done a lot of work with PLCs, professional learning communities in our district, and one of the things that staff are always asking me is, can we go, so all third graders go to another building? So they've done a great job within the building. We're actually getting them out and about in their own building. We do instructional rounds that we go in as the district, and then we have our teacher learning walks as well, and they go into each other's classrooms. And every time we meet with them afterwards and they tell us what they learned, that they're always amazed by what they saw in those classrooms. So I agree with you that we have a lot of exemplary teachers. No matter what district you go in, you're going to find there's a lot of great ones, and then some that are not so great. And those are the ones that need the support so that we can grow them as well. So I would love to see that as part of the evaluation, that staff members might be willing to have some peer mentoring such as you're describing, because I think that's how they can learn and grow. It doesn't even have to be part of the evaluation. It can just be more of a willingness and an openness to go visit other classes. And you have to, unfortunately, you have to substitute them out to do that. But I think you can build it in. We've done it in our district. We've actually taken them throughout their school day, and they go for an hour to two during that time frame every couple of months. It's
for
done a lot to help grow
opinions,
them.
Like, I'm sorry. Doing a student survey and asking the students what they liked about certain staff
yeah.
and then what they'd like to see improved.
Yeah, well, that's coming just with the DESE model as well, that they'll be doing surveys. So I think that's going to be already part of the model.
Yeah, I like that.
One of the reasons I stand up is because I'm very hard to miss. 2 minutes, if you give a closing wrap-up sort of a question, answer if you would.
Sure. So thank you again for having me here tonight. I truly believe that I have all the skills necessary to be an excellent superintendent. I know Franklin is a great school system. I would want to make it an even stronger school system. I would want to work together with my administrative team and the community to see what the needs and wants are so that we can grow it together. I've had so many experiences. My current role, as I mentioned to you, is very unique. So my superintendent will tell you that I do a lot of what a superintendent normally does. In my previous district that was smaller, the things that I do with staff, I didn't deal with because my superintendent did. So I have all of the pieces. I handle the budget with my superintendent. I help with professional development as needed, not as much as in my previous role. I've done all the curriculum mapping. I've developed standards-based report cards. I get instructional leadership. I get the management piece. I really have all of the pieces that necessary to do an excellent job. One of the things I've been working on recently, I'm finishing my dissertation, and actually it kind of goes back to what you were asking me earlier. My current dissertation that I just almost finished yesterday, maybe tonight, is on resilience and motivation of kids for college and career success. And a huge piece of that is on grit and growth mindset. And those are the things that we really need to bring in, engage students with those kinds of tools, because there is a lot going on in the world outside the schools. We know with drugs and alcohol and now with the new marijuana law, kids are exposed to so much. So the more we can do, I believe we need to make our kids grittier. So I know Franklin wants to do even more growth with academics, but the way you do it, in my opinion, is getting the growth mindset developed and helping deal with a lot of the social emotional needs. If you can build that and build the resiliency, they'll do a lot better when they leave Franklin and go off to college or the career. So that would be a focus of mine, to see if we can develop programs for that and help support students that way. It's so important. I've had so much experience in budget development, special development. I negotiate all 7 contracts. So there's almost nothing you could throw at me that I haven't done yet. I'm sure you'll find something, but honestly, I do feel well prepared. If you give me the opportunity, I know I'll be an excellent superintendent for your district, and I hope to see you all again. So thank you very much.
Pleasure to introduce Dr. David Thompson, who is currently the assistant superintendent in Blackstone Millville region, and we're delighted to have you tonight. And if you wouldn't mind just telling a little bit about yourself,
sure.
And then we're going to be opening it up to questions, and they'll give you a chance to give a brief closing statement right. At the end, okay?
Thank you. First I want to thank all of you for coming out on this cold, dark winter's night to come visit with me. My name is Dave Thompson. I am currently the assistant superintendent in Blackstone Millville, but I'll kind of go back 27 years in education, and when I look back, I can't believe that I've spent that long working with kids, but it has been the joy of my life. I started off as a very successful teacher, and I'm sure a lot of you have looked at my resume online, so I'm not going to go through it line by line, but 12 years in the classroom, 10 plus years as a building level administrator, very successful. I was the 2010 middle school principal of the year here in Massachusetts, then moved into central administration around the corner in Blackstone Millville, and that actually was a very strategic move. It was strategic for a couple reasons. One, I knew I was going to work with an incredible superintendent who was going to allow me to get my hands very dirty in a lot of things, and because it's a small district, I get to be involved with everything. So I've done negotiations. We just sat down trying to cut $1 million out of our budget today. That was fun. Building projects. We've done 3 roofs and closing those up. So I've been involved with all of that, which is not, if I was in a large district, and I was in Mansfield, Bridgewater-Raynham is a large district. I had a district responsibility as a math coordinator there as well. I would not have gotten all of those experiences. So I'm very, very happy to come here today and share some of those with you. I value input and working with stakeholders. One thing that people who work with me will tell you is that I am a very good listener. My grandmother used to tell me when I was younger, you have 2 ears and 1 mouth, try to listen twice as much as you speak. So I take that to heart. As a superintendent, as an educational leader, you need to develop a vision for the district. You need to communicate that vision and build partnerships so that all the stakeholders can buy in and help move that forward. Some people in the profession will laugh at me because I will tell you that I love strategic planning. I've had the opportunity of doing it in 3 different districts, been chairman of three different types of committees in those three districts. And then another role that I had as a member of the National Board of Secondary Principals, we did a strategic plan with probably one of the best strategic planners in the entire country. And what I love about that is bringing all the groups together, really digging into what is working in our schools, developing a shared vision, creating a plan for moving that forward, and executing that plan, reporting out on it, revising it, and that actually, I guess in a sick, demented sort of way, is fun, and I really enjoy that. So open, honest, clear communication is something I value. Students first. I make all of my decisions around students and what is best for them in the classroom. Franklin, to be completely honest, I think this is a really, really good fit because of your progressive outlook and approach to things. This is a district that is very proactive and very progressive and looking forward. For instance, you know, the state has not even come out with social emotional standards yet. Franklin's already started putting in curriculum here. All right, and those our new accountability system is going to include a school culture, a social emotional piece. Franklin is going to be well positioned to do well in that accountability. And that's a tribute to the leadership you have here. I'm probably thinking more than my 5 minutes.
Well, just if you want to open up the questions, yeah.
So, and just, I'll just leave it at that. I can't. But I'm really glad to be here.
So yeah, we're ready for questions.
All right.
Really, I feel like, you know, yes. Jessica Pisano, 109 Union, and I failed to say this the other two times. I've got two kids, one elementary, one middle, and both are rising up next year. So, in light of the overwhelming data, what we know about the intellectual, physical, and emotional needs of all students, what would you do to align the middle and high school start times to the national recommendations?
You know, it's funny, because when I was in Duxbury, we looked at doing that. And you know, the research is out there continuously on how your high school students should start at least an hour later than what we're doing to them. And I have a high schooler as well, and the greatest joy in the morning is trying to roust her out of bed and get her moving. So with that being said, there are several obstacles to it from, you know, several years ago. And the first is and foremost is the juxtapositioning of the family structure. Right now, your older kids are home first, so then the younger kids come home afterwards. If you turn that around, it throws that out of line. So it needs to be a process. We need to start discussing how we would do it, if we want to do it. There's a couple things you probably would need to put in place, some sort of after-school care to solve some of those problems. So those would be the first conversations. You know, how do we do it? Is there interest in doing it? What are the problems we need to solve moving forward? And we would probably need to phase it in over time. But you know, the research for kids starting, they do much better in school and beyond if you do that. But it is that there are problems with doing it. One of which is childcare, the older children being home. Practices for athletic teams and games. And it would be a heck of a lot easier if we would just decide as a state we're all doing it, because then we don't have the school down the road wanting to play the game at 3 and your kids are out at 3:30. But it would have to be a conversation. Most are not able to move the full hour. Those that have done so have done a half hour, where that's better than nothing. But it would need to be a process and look at how do we solve the problems here in Franklin.
Oh my God, I'll try to be, I'm verbose.
Right now I'm kind of being verbose.
Yeah, I'm
too,
verbose, so I get
okay.
It. Okay, I happen to have a little girl that was very close to my daughter, mm-hmm. That worked in Franklin. She now works in your district.
Okay.
She's extremely happy, okay? Instead
yep.
of getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and wishing she wasn't here, mm-hmm. She's now very glad that she's there. So I just want to commend you on that. And I think that your district probably has a lot to do with that. Meanwhile, I just want to tell you the definition of workplace bullying, which from the Workplace Bullying Institute, which I'm sure you already know, but it is repeated health-harming mistreatment of one or more persons by one or more perpetrators, and it is abusive conduct that is threatening, humiliating, or intimidating, or there's sabotage for the teachers themselves, and it prevents work from getting done, or verbal abuse. Now, a lot of people like to think that that has to do with, you know, just grousing, you know, from an incompetent teacher, but it isn't. And sometimes they use this legal thing, workplace bullying, it's legal, to interfere or push out people with disabilities. I feel I was one. There are several others that perhaps are on the books. One was
age discrimination.
She did lose. Okay. Nope. Okay. So I just need to tell you and ask you, because this affects the kids, how you feel about that subject and what you plan to do about it. Because, like I want to say before, the fish rots from the head.
True. Okay. Safe learning environment applies to everybody. And one thing that we have done in Blackstone Millville is really create a safe learning environment. We are the middle school principal, who is this year's principal of the year, middle school principal of the year, which I'm pretty proud of as well, is huge in PBIS. If you walk into our schools, we spend a lot of time focused on kids being welcomed, kids feeling safe, social emotional pieces to that. We just, for instance, started bringing in a therapy dog.
The teachers, though.
The teachers. I'm getting there. We need to be fair and equitable with everybody. And I'll be honest with you, I have experienced personally workplace bullying. Okay, it is not productive to the environment. If there are expectations, they need to be clear, concise, what they are. And I believe in a coaching model. Okay, when we do evaluations and we talk about teacher productivity, we need to say, well, here's what we need to do, and here's the PD, and here's the coaching, and here's the mentor who is going to help you get there. I'm very proud of enhancing our mentor program in our district. Expanding it, expanding the hours, expanding the years that we're offering it, and expanding the quality of it. When I got there the first year, we had hired 20 people. I think we eliminated 15 because they weren't working out. Last year we hired 20. We only had 5 that we had to replace. And that's money that you spend and continue to spend investing in your people if you're not developing them. So setting that up, making sure clear expectations, clear goals, so you can get there.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, hi.
My name is Lisa Brady. I have 2 children in the schools, 1 in elementary, 1 in middle school. My question for you is, as you know, Franklin has very high performing schools. We have amazing administrators and teachers. Despite the fact that we have very low funding for people, we've had experienced a tremendous number of cuts with teachers. Cuts with foreign language programs, cuts with the arts, cuts with gifted programs, etc. So my question for you is, can you please outline several specific actions that you will take to get Franklin from good to great?
Okay. There's several things. Funding is, right now in this state, in this country, is a universal problem, okay? Federal funding is dropping, state funding is flatlined, and there's more and more expectations every year, contractual obligations, as well as mandates coming through, so there is that press. Back to the strategic plan, what are those things we want to bring back? Foreign language, and in this country, I'm not quite sure we start foreign language in the high school. We should be starting it back in the elementary school, and I believe, if I'm correct, that is one of the programs that you folks lost. And I commend you, again, that progressive piece for bringing it in. So we need to identify what those shortcomings are, and we need to work with the school committee, the town boards, the people of the town, and determine how we're going to get there. The reality is, unless something changes drastically, on the state and federal level, we're going to need to take a step back as a town and figure out how we're going to fund those things if we want to bring them back. And that is a very touchy subject because you're ultimately talking about raising taxes. So once you get through that discussion, then you start using the O word, the override word, to bring yourself back up to that point in time. Then, it shifts over to the citizens to help us get that done. I, as the superintendent, cannot politic for an override. So the other thing we can all do, and I know the school committee has been involved with that, is talk with our state representatives. The foundation budget formula that we have right now is grossly out of date. It was from 1993. It's about $1 billion short, and right now there is no plan to fill that gap. So we as a state need to look at that piece as well. But a combination of probably those two approaches, local tax increases or local revenue somewhere, maybe not the T word, okay, to fill in those gaps, as well as state funding coming in, and we're probably several years off from federal funding meeting its quota there where it should be.
I'm Janet Walsh. I live at 621 East Lane in Franklin, and not only am I a resident of the town, but I'm an employee of the town. Mm-hmm. I'm a paraprofessional. I have been for 15 years. So my question to you is, how do you support paraprofessionals and their role in the classroom, given the fact that we do have budget cuts and we're being pulled to do more coverage of the teachers going to meetings and classrooms and
right.
secretary coverage and things like that? How do you support the paraprofessionals?
We don't. I've never actually pulled paras to do that. We've brought in subs to do those sorts of things. So I guess we would have to relook at how do we do coverages. Even if there's a special ed meeting, there is a substitute teacher who would come in and move around and cover those things. As far as supporting paraprofessionals, they are planned for and with for our PD offerings. In fact, we have them coming back, and we're actually paying for them to come back for an extra day to get professional development on co-teaching and how that works so that they can help out in the classroom. That's happening in April. Paraprofessionals are a huge value. They know the kids, they work intimately with the kids, and having good quality people in the classroom assisting is very important. And we often ask them to do the most difficult jobs, and we don't always give them the support and training that we need, so that is something that we're currently working on right now.
Thank you.
Welcome. Yes, ma'am.
Andy Verheyen, before I my question is, there's a lot of different needs for all of the different kids, special needs, and that involves special needs to me means everybody that needs the extra help to those that are already coming into kindergarten overachieving. Mm-hmm. And from my experience, I know that when the resources are available in the schools, the current administrators, the principals, they do a great job with those resources getting mm-hmm. them to the kids that they need them. The problem, as we mentioned before, is the lack of resources. So, and the resources we do have, good thing that they go to those schools that need to be brought up for those. But
right.
at the same time, we shouldn't forget the kids that are high achieving. And
mm-hmm.
so, with the limited resources that we do have, how can you help those students from the very beginning, starting in elementary school, so that they don't just, we're not waiting for their peers to catch up to them?
Right. And there's actually two sides to this. We need to be consistently assessing where our students are to figure out where the weaknesses are and target the intervention, okay? And there's multiple ways to do that. You can have district-wide assessments. You can have, there are software programs out there that'll do that and give you intervention pieces as well. But then you need to schedule the time and the day to do it. And that's what it comes down to. What is those blocks and how many blocks are there for that to happen? And basically what you do is you regroup your students based on where they are and have them work on those things. And you have them work in groups and you use the paraprofessionals in the classroom, or maybe it's a co-taught with a special ed teacher, and you move around and meet their needs. And those kids that are doing above and beyond, you move them forward. okay? And just to give you, you know, an example, when I took over Rainham Middle School, it was in the lower third of the state, okay? We moved that to the upper third, level one school, 5 through 8 middle school, okay? Became a level one school. It's been a level one school for the last 3 years. So 1 year, 2 years after I left, okay? What did we do? We talked, we sat and we talked about kids and their work. We planned, we planned interventions for them. We made time to do it, okay? And through that model, you know, correcting the curriculum, bringing it up to a high level of rigor and relevance, ongoing, you know, we moved our kids up. Special ed kids who have language disabilities were taking Spanish as an audit as eighth graders. Okay? It can be done. It's about looking at your time of day and making sure your teachers have the tools and the training to do it. But, you know, it's a great opportunity to really make sure, and you need to make sure they're moving along that continuum on a regular basis. You know, the test at the end of the year, the MCAS test or MCAS 2.0 or whatever it might be is great, but those kids are, when you get the results, are in the next room. Okay? Yes, ma'am.
Gail Irwin, 56 Hilltop Road. As part of your job description, you're required to go to different town meetings and report to different groups, but I'm wondering how do you plan to communicate and interact with the parents of the school and the citizens of the town of Franklin?
Okay, yeah, and that is something, just being out there, standing on a field is one thing, but you need to put yourself in a position where you can engage with the stakeholders.
Right.
Okay, it's not enough to just show up at the auditorium and do the clap thing and leave. You need to be able to interact. One thing that I do is I kind of have a chart to make sure I get around to different places and different types of activities. You know, and I do like to watch basketball, baseball not so much, but basketball and a few things along that line. All right, and I love a good production. And like I mentioned in the interview with the search committee, I can't wait to hear the band in that gorgeous new auditorium. Hopefully, we'll see. But with that, the other piece is you need to put yourself in a position where you're talking to parents and students. And one thing that I like to do is go to PTO meetings, okay, and just be, you know, a guest at the PTO and have this kind of conversation and hear those kinds of concerns. And then be able to bring those back to the team, the administrative team, and have conversations about, well, you know, what's your take on this? What is this a real problem? How do we address this problem? How do we plan to move forward? Is this a right now, this year thing, or is this a future thing? Okay? But those kinds of intimate conversations, you know, are something that I've always prided myself on.
Thank you.
Well, yes, ma'am.
Okay.
This poll's going to drive me crazy, by the way.
Meg Kamir, Central Process. My question is in regards to using technology in the classroom. I'm wondering what's your sort of expectation at high school level, middle school? Like, what would your expectation be as a superintendent in terms of utilization of technology?
Yeah, it is a balance, especially early on. Where you're trying to get that literacy piece. Jokingly at my house, well maybe not jokingly, but at my house I'm called the gadget guy, okay, because I have all the gadgets, I have to play with technology. I have not taken the test to be Google certified, but I probably would be able to at least pass stage one Google certification, okay? Technology is extremely important moving forward because this generation is going to be using more and more technology as they move forward. If we're looking at our kindergartners, they're going to be dealing with artificial intelligence and talking to walls and all sorts of strange stuff like that to get things done. Okay? So we need to start using that. We need to balance that with our literacy and numeracy instruction. All right? But you often, at that lower level, can use technology to reinforce, the term is gamifications, but they have activities they do, and you know, people say, oh, let's just look that they're playing games, but it's very differentiated and progresses as they progress. So it really is very individualized as they move forward. Then you move into elementary school, okay? You know, cultivating curiosity and using technology to find facts and integrate knowledge, we should be starting at that level, okay? And then we get into middle school. If you've ever seen a middle school person with a passion for something, it's like a dog with a bone, all right? And you can use technology to expand that and expand those offerings. So you're talking about a technical literacy piece, okay? And then when you get to high school, it needs to be relevant and they need to be solving real world problems. And you get that into that in middle school as well, okay? And they start rethinking about how they're going to solve problems and how to present data, and they really start thinking creatively, which is going to be huge in the next century. You know, these kids moving forward are going to be working with computers and robotics all the time. All right, we need to start talking about coding as a language. Okay, back in elementary school. And that could be simple robotics. Okay, but they need to start thinking that way because that's what they're going to be doing. Even someone working in a factory or whatever is going to have to manipulate a robot or a computer to get the job done. Did I answer the question?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I get a little passionate about that. So I want to make sure I didn't go too far off. Yes?
I'd be curious to know, you're coming from a district with high school, middle school, two elementary schools, and this is a district with high school, three middle schools, six elementary schools, a preschool program. What would you wish for in an ideal world from us, from the town, from the folks who work in the school district, from the parents, when you arrive to get off to a great start as a superintendent?
Well, seeing that there's 11 buildings, I'll probably need roller skates. No, just kidding. You know, and I think I mentioned earlier, you know, if I was lucky enough to be in this position, you know, I don't take a lot of time off. I have like 31 vacation days right now. I don't know what the heck I'm going to do with them. But one thing I would like to do with them is spend time in the district and start kind of a listening tour. Get around, meet people, go to board meetings, find out, you know, who people are, and that's really, so facilitating that would be helpful. You know, and I've had the privilege of mentoring principal candidates in this district, so I know, you know, a good handful of the administrators here, and they're top notch. So, you know, I guess maybe that's thinking a little too far ahead. I haven't really thought that one through. But basically, you know, the access to get out there and start those connections, because this is, as I mentioned earlier, is a position that you really need to build relationships with. So, you know, any help with doing that, whether it's an introduction to the planning board, whether it's an introduction to the finance board, whether it's, you know, arranging a meeting with, you know, with the town administrator, times with PTO, so that kind of help to grease the roller skates, if you will, to get out there to be able to do that would be helpful. But other than that, you know, and again, I've worked, you know, Bridgewater Raynham is basically the same size, so and I was all around in that district. It's not particularly hard. I mean, right now, what I try to do, and again, it's budget season, and again, sitting down and having your eyes roll in the back of your head, looking at those numbers, trying to get them down to a reasonable level. But I try to get into a building every single day. So that practice would be the same. Because, you know, when, you know, the nucleus of the cell, if you will, the most important unit is the classroom and the teacher in front of that classroom working with those kids. And going out there and seeing that and interacting with that and seeing the kids actually charges me up. So, yes, ma'am.
I'll go again.
Good.
What role do you think the superintendent has in working with the rest of the government-type agencies within the town council, our legislators? What do you think the role is of the superintendent, and what steps would you take to build the relationship for the first ones you would do?
Well, it's a very active role. Okay, it's a role of advocacy, and you know, I think I mentioned my role on the state principals board and the national principals board. That's something I did an awful lot of. I've sat in Senator Warren's office. I sat in Senator Brown's office. To give you an idea how long it was. You know, talking to staffers there, lobbying, telling them what we need, how we need it. It would be similar to that. It's a little more personal. They're right next door, but. You know, building those relationships and advocate, you know, sharing the vision that's created for the district, why, explaining why things are important. And one thing that I think that I'm very good at is explaining edu jargon in layman's terms and what it means to people and why it's important for our children moving forward. So I often joke that, you know, you start off as a teacher educating students and you become a principal and you're educating students and teachers and you become a central administrator and you're working with educating principals and teachers and students. Then you become a superintendent. Well, then you're educating, you know, all your stakeholders. You're educating parents, you're educating town boards, you're educating legislators who think they know a lot. Some do, some don't. Okay, but you know it is, and you know, and I'll give you for instance, we had the state senator come and visit Millville, and you know he was talking about Common Core standards. So he got my 5-minute elevator talk on the Common Core standards, which are based on the Massachusetts standards that have us fifth in the world right now. So why on earth are we even talking about this? So, you know, going back, so, you know, that targeted sort of, you know, factual-based story, bringing it back, but it is about sharing that vision, advocating for what you need, and it's ongoing. It doesn't just turn on during budget season. You need to use every single opportunity when it arises.
David, if you'd take the last 2 minutes and do some wrap-up statements.
Okay. Yeah, so 27 years, and you know, and if you met me 27 years ago as a fresh kid coming out of college, I know it still looked fresh, but not that fresh, fresh kid coming out of college, and you asked me if I would be standing here talking to a group of parents and school committee members talking about becoming a superintendent, I would have told you you were crazy. What I've learned about myself over those 27 years is that not only am I a good educator, but I'm also a very good leader. And that by moving into those roles, I can actually do more good than I could just in my classroom. And I did a lot of good, and I'm still very, very close to all of my kids, okay? If I'm lucky enough to come here to Franklin, I'll have 5,500 kids, and I will treat them and look out for them just like I do for my own. I'm gonna try not to cry right now. But with that being said, what I bring is a very open and honest, clear, communicative style. I don't pull punches, I don't play games, I tell you how it is. We might agree, we might disagree, and that's okay. But it's based on respect, okay? It's based on the common good. It's always student first. And I'm very, very proud of that. I've never left a place worse off than I found. I always move things forwards. You don't do that alone. It's a group effort. I'm very collaborative. I believe in the team. I am always looking to improve myself and the team and others. Very accessible, very down to earth. I do have a sense of humor. Hopefully it came through. But I think that, you know, if you can't laugh at yourself a little bit, if you're taking yourself way too seriously, something's probably going to break down the line. But this is teaching kids and doing things for kids and influencing the future is probably the best job you could possibly have. And it's one of the most important. And I believe that, and I believe in the power of teaching and the power of really caring about our kids. So with that,
thank you.
I think I'll... Thank you very much. Thank you. Very nice meeting you again. Thanks for coming out.
Thank you.
We appreciate your questions. We more need your response and input in terms of what advice do you give us, the school committee, for the decision we will make next week or begin to make next week. Please.
Yeah, you didn't sign in. With your email address. That's how we're going to get the link to the survey to get your feedback about the candidates. We value it. We appreciate it. So it's going to be coming out probably. Actually, I'll give you the process. Today we met with Dr. Hirsch half a day. She met with a bunch of two different focus groups, and teachers had a chance to ask questions. Central office had a chance to ask questions. other faculty, principals and assistant principals. Tomorrow, Susan Klitschko will be coming, and then on Thursday, Dave Thompson will be coming and going through the same process. We're gathering feedback from everybody. So at the end of that, that's when you will, you know, look for the link, the email that will come to you. Please, we're going to look at it very, very carefully. We value your input, and we really put a lot of work into the process. We want to make sure you get the best person. So we really thank you for coming tonight. And if you didn't sign,
so can I ask a question of the school committee?
Yeah.
I downloaded the job description earlier in the resumes, and I had a question on the job description. It says that you are looking to hire the candidate for 1 year, and I want to know, is that typical?
Does it say that?
It's right here in the job. It says here, Franklin Public Schools job description, and the very last page, it says terms of employment, 12-month position, salary to be negotiated with the committee.
No, I think that's 12-month position means it's
year-long. It's not like 9 months.
We are looking, to answer your question, we are looking for a candidate for 1 to 3 years, depending on the negotiation phase, which will come at the end of this particular process. Okay. So there could be variable answers to that.
Okay, all right, thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
You are heroes of the Republic tonight because you really did a good thing. Thank you.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? If you like this, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like this, please let me know. Through the feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements, and I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you've got questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is entitled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.